Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
City News.
Hello, good evening. Welcome to Eyewitness News, coming to you live from our studios here at number 11, Dr. Martin Loop, in Adabraka, in Accra. My name is Selom Adunu. Tonight I'm here with
Akosia Ochi.
Coming up over the next 90 minutes.
The Ministry of Education is not changing uniforms for all public busy schools. Neither is the ministry repainting existing schools.
This evening, the Ministry of Education provides clarity on a supposed change of uniform and repainting of some big schools across the country. Critics say it is a misplaced priority. We hear from the ministry. Also coming up, a Jisu Bai in the Jisu Bai election, independent candidate and former MP for the area, Kobna Eduomi, accuses the MPP of some machinations ahead of Tuesday's contest. Meanwhile, polls suggest a neck and neck race. There is more later tonight. Still on Eyewitness News, military and prison officers clash in Boku. That clash has left three persons or prison officers injured. We'll bring you more details on this. Stay with 97.3 City FM for more on this and other stories on Eyewitness News and in business.
And in business, players in telecommunications sector target end of May to fully resolve disruptions in internet undersea cables.
There is more business in the next 50 minutes. Eyewitness News is live across the country on all our affiliates and around the globe at citynewsroom.com. In the Western region, this is Beach 105.5 FM, Sky Power 93.5 FM, both in Takoradi. In the Borno region, this is Greener 95.9 FM in Sunyani, Hammers Radio 106.5 FM in Gosu in the Hafo region. In the Shanti region, this is Focus 94.3 FM in Kumasi and Orange 107.9 FM also in Kumasi. This is Revival 99.3 FM in Tajevu in the Volta region. In the Northern region, Radio Bimbila 91.9 FM. 91.1 FM. Upper East region, this is Tanga 93.7 FM in Boga Tanga. And in the Upper West region, we are on Tungsong 97.3 FM in Wa and Jirapa 96.1 FM. Your comments are welcome via WhatsApp line 0549-986-996. You can follow me on X, formerly Twitter, at Selom Adunu. The hashtag, as always, is City Newsroom. We take our very first story.
Now, the Ministry of Education has clarified that it is not changing the uniforms of all students in public schools, as been speculated. Or the ministry explains that it's instead focusing on newly built schools, aiming to uplift their appearance and enhance public confidence in public basic schools. So the spokesperson for the Ministry of Education, Kwesi Kwating, has been providing further clarification.
The Ministry of Education is not changing uniforms for all public busy schools. Neither is the ministry repainting existing schools. It is important to situate what the minister said in the right context. And it is important to also recall that at a symposium organized by the Ministry of Education to engage stakeholders about the impact of the Free Senior High School program, the minister took a bite on aggressive initiatives and intervention taken to transform public basic schools. It was within this address where the minister said that public basic schools, and of course referring to the newly built ones, will be given a facelift in terms of their appearance and outlook to enhance public confidence in those public basic schools. Because, I mean, naturally, you realize that a lot of people do not place value on our public basic schools. And the minister was, at the end of the day, highlighting the importance of rebrand and re-uplift facelift the public basic schools to make sure that we repose the confidence and public trust in it.
Kwesi Kwarteng is spokesperson for the Ministry of Education. Now, still in education, a member of the Education Committee of Parliament, Joseph Kwame Kuma, has disclosed that a committee will be embarking on a fact-finding visit to senior high schools to verify the distribution of tablets to students. President Akufo-Addo recently announced the distribution of smart tablets to 1.3 million senior high school students nationwide at the launch of the Ghana Smart Schools Project in Accra. Or in an interview with City News, the Kintampo North MP says the Education Committee, charged with the oversight responsibility on educational policies, is yet to see the tablets and their components.
Just to, for the international news to carry, Ghana government is doing what we are giving tablets to senior high students. Meanwhile, when you come to the ground, it's selective, which is not fair. We are yet as a committee to follow up. We will be doing what we call a visitation to some of the schools. We also asked the minister during our workshop recently in Kokoridua that we would like to engage, we would like to have a meeting with the minister and the suppliers to even explain to us what is entailed in the whole tablet. We want to be sure. But to be frank with you, we have not yet seen the product physically as a committee.
That was a member of the Education Committee of Parliament, Joseph Kwame Kuma. Now, the Institutional Suppliers Association of Ghana has revealed the government still owes them an amount of 130 million cedis despite the settlement of 26 million Ghana cedis. Our government last week released an amount of 26 million cedis to institutional suppliers responsible for the supply of school uniforms, physical education kits and stationery as part of the Free Senior High School. Now, a statement issued by the Ministry of Education on Monday said the release of the funds was to settle the arrears and pledged its commitment to ensuring the smooth running of educational institutions. But spokesperson for the National Association of Institutional Suppliers, Emmanuel Aivo, indicates that more is yet to be paid.
The government owes us 130 million Ghana cedis. 130. So even that 20, assuming that we are saying that yes, all the 26, it is true that they released 26 million. Mm-hmm. It is still hopefully inadequate because we are talking about 130 million Ghana cedis here. And they are saying that they've released 26 million. And that 26 too, they are saying that they've released to PE kits and stationary suppliers. And we are saying that our position as a ministry is that none of us for 7 years is doing the PE kits and stationery. So those people that government have released that money to, in quotes, the PE kit and stationery suppliers, it means that money have gone back to them because that particular contract is being awarded at the ministry level. They pay them separately. Their money doesn't even come to us. So we are saying that there's a lot of issues about the payment, and we are actually trying as much as possible to engage them, be going there. To engage them further on some of these challenges that we are facing.
That is Emmanuel Aivo, his spokesperson for the National Association of Institutional Suppliers.
Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. Let's return to our very first story, where the Ministry of Education has been trying to clarify a supposed change of uniform and repainting of some schools across the country. The spokesperson for the ministry, Kwesi Kwarteng, has joined me on the line to bring some clarity to this matter that is causing a lot of controversy in many quarters. Hello, good evening, sir. Welcome to Eyewitness News. What is the context, really? Why will the Ministry of Education want to change the uniform of some schools in the country?
Good evening, Shalom, and thank you for the opportunity to use your platform to address this matter, of course, for the consumption of Ghanaians. So, if you recall, just last Tuesday, the Ministry of Education held a symposium dubbed the Free Senior High School Story. And of course, it was an opportunity for all stakeholders to meet and interact about the impact of the Free Senior High School policy. So the Minister for Education, Dr. Osedu Chum, was equally scheduled to speak at that forum or symposium. And of course, after outlining some of the initiatives or giving an overview of the whole Free Senior High School program, he also took a bite at the interventions that the Ministry of Education has undertaken at the public PG schools. Barcelona, even before proceeding with that, it is important to also highlight that at every point where the minister has spoken, he's made several admissions that the public basic schools, particularly the junior high school level, has always been the weakest link within the education sector. So he took the opportunity to address the stakeholders and, in a larger extent, all Ghanaians about some of the interventions and programs that has been initiated at the public basic schools level. To that effect, he showed videos about the 21st century model junior high schools. And the model junior high schools, currently there have been a number of them, 10 of them across the length and breadth of the country. And the whole idea is that, for instance, if you go to, a town like, say, Durban, instead of having about, let's say, 11, 12, 15 junior high schools who may not necessarily have science laboratories and other, teaching and learning materials or infrastructure, what we do is that we build one bigger one for them and provide all the facilities, sometimes even with a bath, so that students will be able to access. And the context was that after introducing these 21st century model high schools, we also want to take that initiative or take that step to also facelift the whole basic education system or arrangement. So based on that, what the minister mentioned that we also have to look at rebranding or repackaging basic education to make it more attractive. And for that matter, if you, for instance, initially we painted the old buildings brown and yellow. This time around, we need to, get more brighter colors. So this time we painted these buildings white and blue. So for emphasis sake, in terms of the painting, it is not as though we are going to paint all existing public basic schools. No, that is not the case. We're only, emphasis is made on the newly constructed 21st century model junior high schools. And of course, he also made a point about, the lack of general confidence by Ghanaians and the fact that Ghanaians ordinarily are not willing to associate with the public basic schools because we feel, in terms of quality, it's not good. And so after these steps has been taken to uplift it, we also have to, take steps to give it a more appealing outlook by also introducing, nicer uniforms there. So with regards to the uniforms too, specific emphasis was laid upon the 21st century model high schools as a way of, letting Ghanaians know that a change is coming. If you recall, he kept repeating, transformation has come, and there will be a time where Ghanaians will queue to look for admission in a public basic school. So for me, like you rightly asked, what is the context? I believe that when the context is properly laid, Ghanaians should be able to understand that, one, we're not talking about changing the uniforms for all public basic schools, but we're only referring to the newly constructed public basic schools. Again, we're also not talking about repainting existing ones because, what would be the point about repainting an existing school that even in the future you may demolish because it's dilapidated and introduce a new one, which is more convenient and offers an opportunity for students to access all the teaching and learning materials that are necessary. So, that is the context within which the minister put the whole commentary. But, I don't want to say it's unfortunate. Maybe from the Ministry of Education outside too, we also needed to do more of the explanation to make Ghanaians better appreciated. But it looks like, somebody makes a presentation for about 45 minutes to 1 hour, and just a portion, less than 3 minutes, is interpreted in a way that makes Ghanaians to believe that the ministry, we've misplaced our priority and there are more pressing issues to address, and all our interest is to rebrand. And Ghana, as soon as we talk about rebranding, it raises a lot of eyebrows, particularly when you also say you are going to repaint schools. People will be talking about procurement issues and the general mistrust for politicians, where a lot of Ghanaians will feel that somebody is going to benefit. No. Ordinarily, if you build, certainly you are going to paint. So it is just the color that we opted for, brighter colors.
Yes, very well explained. But the point is, these new schools, they are still basic schools, are they not? So, I mean, the fact that they are newly built and all of that shouldn't be the reason why we want to change the uniform. I wonder what the change of uniform really will bring, apart from your talk about confidence, etc. And indeed, yeah. I'm not sure the change of uniform is what will bring the confidence, if indeed public school people are not confident. I'm not sure it is a uniform. It's deeper than that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, obviously. I mean, to reduce the whole conversation to a uniform, it will be very simplistic. And I agree with you. But you see, the context that I put my response was that we are talking about a 21st century model junior high school. So this is not the usual 6-unit classroom block. No, we are talking about 3-4-story building with a lot of them with about 12 laboratories in it. Public basic schools having a bath, having Prometheum walls, having smart classroom and what have you. So I mean, certainly when you undertake such a transformative step, you want to also augment it to have a more appealing outlook. So yes, the uniform alone will not do the trick. But you see, interestingly, and if we are being very honest to ourselves, the public basic school system, I mean, from time immemorial, nobody wants to associate it. Without any disrespect to anyone, but the average even low-income earner will rather prefer a private basic school rather than, say, the daughter or the child wearing a public basic school shirt to school. So certainly, there is a general lack of trust and lack of confidence for the public basic school. So yes, it will take a lot of actions, a lot of interventions, a lot of variables has to be changed to be able to make sure that you have a combined effect of what you are looking at. So yes, I agree with you. It's not necessarily the uniform, but of course, it begins with a step where you change infrastructure, introduce state-of-the-art infrastructure, make sure that, for instance, I mean, you may go to a school where you may have about 5 people with just one teacher. Of course, you may also be looking at a school, for instance, with about, recently we saw on social media, and you may see about 50, 60 students also with one teacher, whilst a school with 5 students may have about 6 teachers. So why don't you bring all of them under one umbrella? Make sure that you provide all the adequate teachers there and make sure that they have access to all the relevant teaching and learning materials that are required. Since you are unable to provide all teaching and learning materials to all junior high schools, but if you are bringing, for instance, you are collapsing 15 junior high schools and bringing it into one school, you can. So this is a facelift. And this requires, the nation's attention. This requires a recognition. So it is, the emphasis is not really on the uniform. Like I said, the whole conversation.
Yeah, but we are starting with the uniform, and that's what has caught the attention of people.
Yeah,
and that's what is generating all of this. And
yes,
it's specifically so because recently there was a change of uniform for the basic schools. Of course, I know you and I went to school and we wore the brown uniform. Call it Abeni Kokonte or something. You know, we wore that and we're happy with it. I'm not sure it raised issues of confidence, etc. As far as I know, I didn't feel inferior to other people who schooled elsewhere. I mean, it was okay. But when we were changing the uniforms about 3 years ago to the striped ones with the hat on it and all of that, it was the same reason of confidence and inferiority complex, self-esteem, etc. We gave. Here we are introducing a new uniform in the same public space for, albeit a new, you call it 21st century school, you know, and giving the same reason. Why can't students in the public space wear the same uniform? Does it change anything?
Because the problem is still the same. So, just that the approach to resolving it may be different. And that's how come for us, we introduced the infrastructure bit before we are talking about even uniforms. But you see, Salom, there are a lot of things that we see so far, maybe because the proposal is coming from a politician, but not within maybe the technocratic system. But aside that, if you look at, for instance, at the senior high school level, are you aware that every senior high school have its own unique uniform? And that is not a problem in Ghana. I mean, there is this school in Kumasi, ASEM, and just right behind ASEM, there is also a Catholic school. These are all government public basic schools. But of course, when it comes to the Catholics, they prefer that they use their independent uniforms. And interestingly, maybe we may have to commission researchers to also look into that. Interestingly, parents prefer, the average Ghanaian parents prefer to take their children to that school. You go to Atom and there are only five students from class one to class six. Just because, I mean, it's a public school, the whole perception that public schools are not good. So if you want to transform public schools and you introduce infrastructure, amenities and development, I of course, I mean, we may have our own opinions, but I mean, what a variable like, for instance, the uniform, a white top, and let's say whether black or blue black trousers, will not be so much of an issue, particularly when you go to the senior high school level. Every school independently selects their uniforms, and parents are very happy about it, and you all want to associate with that. And I mean, Salom, beyond anything, I work within the Ministry of Education, and you are a parent. If we are being very honest to ourselves, how many middle-income earners ordinarily will want to take their children to public business school? Because we...
Yes, but because the issue is not with the uniform. The issue, like you've admitted, is deeper than that. So let's start with dealing with those issues. Teacher absenteeism, you know, provision of textbooks, you know, all those things that make the government schools or the public schools not competitive. I think those must be tackled first, rather than seeking to change the form, rather than substance.
Shalom, when I spoke about the uniform, it does not necessarily imply that in terms of all the other variables, there has not been any intervention. Then what is the essence of, I mean, leadership being at the ministry? People pick their cars, go morning, 6 a.m. by the minister is in office. Sometimes you leave the office 10 p.m. and you feel there is nothing going on. I mean, so how even did this infrastructure, I mean, conversation did even come into place? Actually, in terms of all the variables, that's why I said it's not like a linear sequence. All the variables are also constructively being tackled, of which the uniform happens to be a component of it. But you see, like I indicated, if you were in that room and the presentation that was made, every other person will place more premium on the infrastructure development and other key variables that will cause education transformation. I mean, like I indicated, I was speaking to one of your sister stations, and I said that at every point, the media shapes the narrative of the conversation that we have. So it all depends on sometimes where the media shifts the narrative, and more emphasis will be placed there. So for now, nobody is talking about the infrastructure development. Nobody is talking about the fact that our junior high schools are now going to indeed, I mean, be redefined and get a true meaning of a high school status. Just like if you go to other jurisdictions, they are there.
But these are not new, because these are things that the minister and yourself you've spoken about over the period.
You feel the uniform is new.
No, because this is a new thing we've seen. And given the history, the renaming of universities, the change of uniforms 3 years ago, and all of that, I mean, it raises suspicion. That what are you trying to achieve? You know, so grant the media that, and grant the people that it's a real talking point, given the background and the history.
Yeah,
let's move it forward. So this uniform, what is it? What is the color? Do we have it? Did we showcase it at the meeting or at the symposium, or we are now going to decide what it should be?
So with regards to the presentation that I've sat in, for instance. There was one video clip that was shown in the minister's conference where the minister went to teach the students and they appeared in their, I mean, it was a lab. I think they went to the lab on that day. It's also a busy school. And they were in black trousers and white shirts with a tie. And you see, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but I somehow believe that your presentation may have an impact on even your how disciplined you are in terms of where even your learning environment. So I mean, the videos I've seen, the presentation that I was there, I think it was either blue black trousers and the white shirt. So that's what I'm saying, that
so the uniform will be a white shirt and black trousers for the gentleman. And I'm sure it will be black skirt and white top for the ladies, like Accra High School, right?
Yes, so like I'm saying, for the newly built schools, I mean, where the minister went there, that is the uniform that was showcased during the presentation. But you see, like I indicated...
No, just to clarify this, so does it mean that all... You said there are 10 of those schools which have been newly built, right? Does it mean they are all going to wear the same uniform, or each of the 10 will decide the uniform to wear?
So far as I am concerned, the minister spoke about the new uniforms for the model high schools. And of course, I mean, the expectation is that when you talk about a new school uniform, it's not going to be different because you are talking about a uniform. It's not going to be different. So the expectation is that the model schools will have that conformity.
I see. Yeah. Okay, good. So let's move to the infrastructure. So we understand that the infrastructure we have now can accommodate about 5-10 schools at one place. Is that correct?
Even if you go to, for instance, the one at Jabin, for instance, it's going to take care of all the junior high schools. Because you see...
want to understand. So it will take care of all the junior high schools in Jabin, so that all the junior high schools in Jabin would have been collapsed into this huge edifice. Is that the case?
Yes, that is the idea. Because so that they will also be able to assess amenities that if you are decoupling these schools, you will not be able to provide for each of the schools.
I see. How about access, geographic access? Because we say that the schools are scattered, so people sometimes walk long kilometers, 10 kilometers, etc., before they get to school in the morning and go back in the evening. If we are now centralizing the school at one venue, have we thought about geographic access? People in the hinterlands, where before we had schools, but now those schools have all been collapsed into one big one at a certain place. They'll have to come from far and near. Have we thought about that?
I mean, obviously, when you are citing a school, certainly all those assessments will be done. For instance, I mean, let me just take you a bit, I mean, give you an example of the Kwabena Day School, for instance, which happens to be a high school. It's been openly subscribed just because it was properly cited or located. And so a school like that, for instance, will not work in extreme urban communities where you may have students walking extra miles to be able to access the school. But of course, if you come to my hometown, Domiabra, for instance, and you build a school in the center of the town, every no student is going to walk, for instance, for even more than 10 minutes or 5 minutes to be able to access that school. But at the same time, if you do not provide such school, you are getting the Presbyterians, you are getting the Methodists, you are getting the Anglicans and the Adventists, the list can go on, having their independent schools, but with the student not having the right access to quality teaching and learning materials, which obviously reflects in their outcome and in the long run will have an impact on the socioeconomic transformation. For instance, if you have, for instance, 11,000 junior high schools, it is difficult to provide laboratories for all the 11,000 junior high schools, to build new laboratories for them. But if you reduce these schools, particularly those which are very accessible within, say, less than 5 or 10 kilometer radius, and you are able to reduce these schools to, for instance, 4,000, it becomes easier for you as a government to provide a state-of-the-art facilities and infrastructure for all these schools and these students to also be able to access. So it is not a case that, in terms of the location, it's just sprang around the country. No. I mean, the in terms of proximity, has also been taken into world consideration.
Yes, I get the point. But the real point I'm trying to get you to respond to is, for example, I walk 5 kilometers to the nearest JHS close to my house in a certain village. Now, because of this new policy or this new idea of collapsing all the junior high schools within the vicinity into a bigger one, now where the bigger one will be sited may not be close to my house. It may or may not. So it means that I'll have to walk extra distance in getting to that school, where in the previous sense, I could have walked a shorter distance to my school. That's one. Number two, of course, you talk about the fact that not all these schools could have laboratories. shouldn't we rather be investing in providing them laboratories and the facilities they need to be competitive as schools, rather than seeking to centralize education in this era of decentralization?
I don't know where this whole concept of centralization comes and how you define it. Because if you build school in Domiabra, where originally the ordinary student can walk 5 minutes to access the school, I don't think that is centralization. My understanding of centralization is when, you only leave it at the top. For instance, everything is done in the central city or the central state, and then you ignore those at the urban and the peri-urban areas. That is not the conversation that we are having. And I indicated that we are also not saying that everywhere in Ghana we are going to put this. You put it at a place where it works. And you see, like I indicated, the context of every conversation or the history is very important. The history is that if we're a government and you have about 23,000, that is a hypothetical value because I don't have the figures right here with me. If we have about 23,000 junior high schools and you need to build a state-of-the-art laboratories for them, comparing 23,000, constructions of laboratories and finding a way, if, for instance, about 15,000 of them can work under this initiative or this innovation, and reducing these 15,000 to say 3,000 and getting all the right access for these children, which one would you rather choose? So it is not a case as though, that's why I even cited the Kwabena A school, for instance. It's cited in the middle of the town where it becomes accessible to the majority of the people there. Kwabena Day School will not also necessarily work in Basempe. Because in Basempe, people may have to travel a lot of distance. That's why when you asked earlier, I said that you have to consider, in terms of your assessment, even the proximity assessment. And it is even the more reason why it is not being done across every part of the country. Mm. So you look at that. I made an example of Jabin. Everybody in Jabin can be able to access a school maybe with centrally located. Mm. If you come to, for instance, my hometown, for instance, everybody should be able to access. But maybe you may go to, let's say, for instance, Kaswa and its environs. If you do that, it may not necessarily work, unless, of course, you are operating a boarding system, which you don't operate a boarding system at the busy schools. So we carefully, considered all these factors that you are raising before looking into that. And what it also means is that there are some schools that will be left that you still have to provide these amenities, because those schools will not, work within the template that you have proposed.
You
understand.
I get it. But I think, of course, you admit it's a big conversation we must have. So I throw a special invitation to you sometime next week. Come to the studio. Yeah. Let's discuss this matter. Well. But on other issues, education is big. On other issues, institutional, I beg you, Institutional Suppliers Association of Ghana, they are revealing that you still owe them some 130 million cedi despite the settlement of 26 million. We were happy when we saw that you had made government had paid them some 26 million. But they're saying that a huge part of the money still remains to be paid. Do we have any idea when government will release money for the payment of the remainder?
So with regards to the briefing that I have, of course, when the last time they came to the ministry and picketed, I was there. I've been engaged in a lot of their meetings. I am aware that indeed the ministry owed them. I am aware that settlement had been made up to, I think, the last supplies that they made contract that they had with government was 2023. That part of 2023, up to part of 2023, that has been paid. I am also aware that the 2023, in terms of the arrears, have not been fully paid. But I am also equally aware that our last meeting, the minister instructed the director of finance to facilitate payment or outstanding payments for them. Of course, I will need to get further briefing in terms of the figures that has been put out there as to whether A amount or B amount. But of course, I acknowledge that there is some outstanding arrears that needed to be paid. Just like government, at every point, government will always have arrears because you provide the services before you come for your money. So, but of course, I assure that I was in that meeting. I met them, the gentleman who just spoke. I met him where the minister directed the director of finance that he should make sure that whatever he has to do possible to make sure that allocations are made to them in terms of the outstanding area. So
very well.
I just have to follow up on that.
Very well. A final one. You know, recently the tablet thing was launched, where basically senior high schools were to get a tablet each and all of that. What's the status of that? Have we started the distribution of the tablets, or what's the status?
Yeah, in terms of the starting, like I indicated in our last conversation, I mentioned that right after the line, 30 schools which already had it, had the tablets even in their stock, the distribution started. But in terms of, the subsequent distribution, I will need to get proper briefing from the Free Association Secretariat in terms of their scheduling and update you accordingly. I do not have, the latest update on it, because, I wasn't aware that's what we are going to discuss, but I will find it for you in our subsequent discussion.
Very well. Thanks so much, Kwesi Kwating. Pleasure as always speaking to you. Eyewitness, thanks so much. He's a spokesperson for the Ministry of Education, and he's been speaking to us on a number of issues, primarily on the change of uniforms and painting of schools, especially built schools, we're told. Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. We'll take a short break, return, and tell you what has been happening in Ejusu, and also the military and prison officers clash in Boku. Don't go away.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Let your voice be heard on Eyewitness News on Facebook at facebook.com/city97.3, Twitter at twitter.com/city973, and Instagram at instagram.com/city973 with the hashtag Eyewitness News.
Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. Now let's go to Boku, where a dispute between the military personnel and officers of the Ghana Prison Service last Wednesday resulted in three prison officers being injured. The incident occurred when military personnel requested a release of two individuals who sought refuge in the prison yard to evade arrest. These individuals had reportedly caused a disturbance during the official launch of the 40th anniversary celebration of Boku Naba Asigri Abugrago Azoga at his palace on April 24, 2024. The two individuals attempted to flee when military personnel intervened, leading them to seek shelter within the prison service yard along the Boku main road. As a result of the altercation, three prison officers sustained gunshot injuries and were promptly taken to the hospital for medical treatment. The public relations officer of the Ghana Prisons Service, Superintendent Adamu Latif Abdul, joins us on the line for some more details on this. Hello, good evening, sir. Welcome to Eyewitness News. What occasioned this clash or confrontation between two key security agencies? Couldn't the officers in question have spoken to resolve the matter amicably? Did it have to come to the display of guns, etc., leading to the injury of some of your men?
Thank you very much. First and foremost, let me mention that it's very unfortunate that such a confrontation happened between the officers of the military and the personnel of the Ghana Prison Service. What actually happened that led to the altercation as well as the violent confrontation is yet to be established through an investigation that has been instituted with the support of the Director General of Prisons, the commanding officer of the high-ranking officers of the military, as well as the IGP. They held several meetings in ensuring that cars were stored at Boko. So what I can tell you now is that an investigation has been launched to uncover the real reasons why such a confrontation of the issues actually happened between the two officers.
Yes, but I don't know what picture it paints to the people in the area. I still hold the view that the two sides could have, spoken to themselves and resolved the matter. But why did your men also prevent the military people from arresting or from bringing out or getting the two persons who allegedly caused disturbance at the Bokunabes event. Why were your men preventing the two to be apprehended by the military?
Okay, as I said earlier on, there are several conflicting views as to what actually happened, whether our men prevented the military from having access or shielded civilians from the military or not. There have been several narratives, and that is why I think it is very important that the investigative team comes out with the facts so that we can educate the public as to exactly what happened that caused this confrontation. Yeah, there have been several stories that are coming up. So I would appreciate it if we can wait for the investigation, outcome of the investigation, so we can educate our public about exactly what happened that occasion that confrontation.
Very well. So when how much time does this investigation team have to do their work or its work?
Yeah, so because of the urgent nature and the seriousness of what happened, the information we have received is that the investigative team has very limited time to present their report and to make known what actually occasioned the confrontation. But as we speak, I must tell you that camp has been restored. The various leadership of the institution have met and have taken some measures that is ensuring that the peaceful collaboration that existed between the two institutions is continuing and peace is actually allowed to reign in the area. Yes.
I see. So what do you know what has happened to the three military officers who allegedly inflicted an injury on your men? You know what has happened to them so far?
I think both sides sustained some injury, and including gunshots, as you rightly mentioned. Like I told you, we cannot say for sure that the gunshot actually came from the military or where the gunshot actually came from. That is why there's a need for the investigation. But what I can tell you now is that our men who sustained the gunshots are now doing very well, receiving treatment at the hospital.
I see. So your men are also in the hospital and they are responding to treatment, I guess.
Yeah, they are responding to treatment, yeah.
Very well. Thanks so much for speaking to us. We will wait to see what the investigation team brings in respect of this matter. Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTF, and our Superintendent Adamu Latif Abdul of the Ghana Prison Service speaking to us on the clash between the military and the prison service officers in Boku. Eyewitness News on 97.3 CTFM. Now to some politics. The campaign team of Kobna Owusu Eduomi, the former member of parliament for Ejusu contesting as an independent candidate in the upcoming by-election, is alleging that the MPP intends to use state security and vigilante groups to intimidate voters in Adomi's stronghold on election day. The campaign team is further alleging that the MPP intends to bribe electoral officers, cause power outages during vote counting, stuff ballot boxes, and transport unqualified senior high school students to vote. This comes shortly after opinion polls by Global Info Analytics, an election think tank, suggesting that Kwabena Owusu-Eduomi stands a high chance of winning the Ejisu by-election. Campaign coordinator for Kwabena Owusu-Eduomi, Isaac Boafu, addressing journalists in Ejisu, hinted that they are prepared to safeguard the integrity of the ballot despite these alleged machinations. But let's speak to Director of Communications of the New Patriotic Party, Richard Ahiagba, for a response on these allegations made against his party by the independent candidate who, until this contest, was a member of the New Patriotic Party. Hello, good evening, sir. Welcome to Eyewitness News. The allegation is that you are plotting to cause power outages during vote counting, all because on the ground it does appear that the independent candidate Kwabena Owusu-Eduomi is causing a lot of waves and may likely win that seat, which will not be good for you, especially as you were the incumbent until your member of parliament died.
Hello, good evening to you and to your listeners. I think Ejusu is protesting to vote for the New Patriotic Party's candidate, Obna Boateng, who the party has selected as its parliamentary candidate on Tuesday. There is nothing that will change that. And it would not be because any ballot box was stuffed or any unqualified individuals will come and vote. It will just be because Jusu always votes MPP because they know what MPP does for them. They are members of the party. They believe in the party's values and tradition. And that's why they vote for the party. Now, the former MP who has served the people for 3 terms raised a press conference today to insult his own people. And I find that most unfortunate. The same people who voted.
What do you mean by he insulted his own people? He said the MPP is trying to buy them.
No, well, the MPP, the constituency is an MPP-dominated constituency. So he's talking about his own people. He's insulting his own people.
He's talking about the leadership of the MPP.
Shalom. The things he said, he cannot be talking about the leadership of the party. And if he's talking about the leadership of the party, he's saying that the people who have always voted for him suddenly have changed. Their conscience is now available for purchase. That's what he's saying. So, in essence, he's insulting his own people. And I find that to be most dishonest and unfortunate. Now, you see, he's made an allegation. Some of you are a lawyer. He has a burden to show us what evidence he has to the effect of what he has said. And I don't know if he's brought any evidence to you. So in essence, he's just preempting a conversation to excuse his own loss that is imminent. I hear you say something about some poll by a polling company that I find most dishonest, maybe mild about it. If anybody could raise any survey in the constituency to arrive at a Diomi's victory, then that poll...
what the poll actually says is that, of course, the independent candidate is trailing, but it's almost neck and neck. That's what he said. Smaller than the margin of error.
All right. That cannot be a credible poll. You know, Salom, we had the same instance in Kumau recently when Philip Basua passed away. We went to the constituency. There was this noise about, the independent is doing that, is doing this. In the end, when the dust settled, it settled the right way. The MPP won that constituency. It will be no different from a Jusu because our people understand what loyalty is, what membership of a party is. Diomi was a member of our party. He was an MP for 3 terms. And just because he was removed, he came and removed people and was MP for 3 terms. Just because he was removed, he became bitter and walking about denigrating the party, besmirching the name of the party, all in the name to serve his personal interest. And I find that not to be a good character. So our party people, they understand that. They understand that if you're a part of a group, you serve the group, you are loyal to the group. His character is not exemplary, and the people will choose a way from him. They will let him know that behavior is unacceptable behavior. And I think that's what he can see coming, and he's preempting all this conversation to have a plausible way of explaining
his foolhardiness in choosing
to contest against the party that he's been a member of parliament
he's making some moves on the ground. I mean, he has some momentum on his side. Will you admit that?
I see him moving about in the constituency. Whether that is momentum or not, I'm just telling you as a matter of fact that the New Patriotic Party will win on Tuesday. In fact, you, Salom, I don't think that you would appreciate a dishonest person, someone who is not loyal, somebody who does not appreciate, is not grateful to the same party that he's led. Now, when he was leading the constituency, when he was the MP, if everybody else were to exemplify the character and behavior he's exemplifying today and decided to contest him independently, would he like it? You understand? So when it was your turn, everybody fell in line and you were the one to lead the constituency. And you led the constituency for 3 terms as an MP. Now, when it came somebody's turn, you are plotting and doing all sorts of things just because you feel you are the entitled one to the MP.
He feels that the party's departed from its usual way of doing things. And so he no more feel belong to the party.
Shalom. If you're in a community and you find everybody to be wrong and you are the only right person, you must know there's something wrong with you. The entire party cannot be wrong and only him right. And so he should look at himself. He is the odd one out. The entire party is focused. We have a candidate, lawyer Kobna Boateng, is the one the party has settled on. This is the way of democracy. All of us cannot lead. And he must understand, when the party opened nomination for people to contest for the position of PC-ship, he was alive. He was here in this constituency. If he really meant well for his people, he would have picked the form to contest. He is one who the party would see as an unexemplary person, one who is not grateful, and the party will not vote for him. It happened in Kumau, and it will happen in Ejusu, that the party's candidate, Kobna Boateng, will win the election.
And they also say that because you are shaking, you are bringing a lot of work to the constituency. I mean, overnight construction of roads and all of that, simply because of the fear of losing the seat to the independent candidate, Edwin.
Well, I think that's a needless conversation, but for what it's worth, we can say that it's better safe. It is better we are safe than sorry. What we are doing in the constituency, as you see, is that nothing to do with this election.
You mean even before the election or before the MP unfortunately passed on?
Yes,
constructing roads in the night.
Shalom, you had the same conversation happen when we went to Kumau.
Yeah, it's been the same. It happens during by-elections.
I'm saying that whichever way you look at it, work happens and the works are being done. We explained this thing when we went to Kumau. In our house, in our families, when something happened, there's work that is done to prepare to receive people. It has nothing to do with the election. It has everything to do with development, and that's what is being done. The truth is that Joshua deserves development. As and when it comes, the development must be allowed to proceed. So really, this has nothing, absolutely nothing to do with the election. And even if it has to do with the election, are we saying that Joshua doesn't deserve the development? Absolutely, they deserve it. So it has to be done.
A final one. So they also have a problem with you describing their candidate as an NDC-sponsored one. Of course, we know NDC didn't field a candidate, but they say you are going around telling the people that he is being sponsored by the NDC, and that cannot be true, and so they have a problem with that.
He's chasing his shadows. If he thinks he's not an NDC person and somebody is saying he's an NDC, why is he worried about it?
No, because the area is an MPP
area. We are not worried about what he is. We are just saying that he's a betrayal. He's not one who is worth a membership of the New Patriotic Party, the same party that did him well. He is today standing against that party. And we think that's not a good character. That's what the people are going to judge. It is not a question of his NDC or not. It is his own behavior of betrayal. That's what the people are going to vote against. He stands no chance of winning that election. He knows it. All these things he's doing are preemptive conversations. If he thinks he's NDC, he should just come out and say he's NDC. Nobody is calling him an NDC. If he knows he's NDC, then he should confirm it. But we are not saying that.
He's your former member of parliament, former MPP member, now independent candidate. Thank you so much, Richard Ahiagba, Director of Communications of the MPP.
You have to be right on that matter.
No, I mean, former MPP member and an independent candidate. That's what he is.
He doesn't even deserve that anymore. If there was a way to remove that, we will.
No, that's not fair.
He's not a member. He
served you for three terms.
He
served you for three terms. And he's had a change of mind, which is fine.
He's a non-MPP member.
But he's a former MP on the ticket of the MPP.
But he's not an MPP. Member.
But he's an independent candidate as we speak. For the record, he's an independent candidate.
To do with MPP.
Former MPP member. Yes. Former MPP member. Thank you so much, Richard. Director of Communications for the MPP, speaking to us. Eyewitness News on 97.3 City FM. We'll take a short break, come back with City Business News, and Point Blank will discuss the LPG issues. Don't go away.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens.
Get the details. Every significant financial transaction, every market movement, and all the policies that affect your business. City Business News. Be informed.
It's time for City Business News on Eyewitness News, brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan, make that big move and dream a reality. I'm Akosi Ochre. Let's start with our first story. The National Communications Authority, NCA, and the Chamber of Telecommunications are targeting to completely resolve the issues with the undersea fiber disruptions by the second week of May 2024, following the expiration of the 5 weeks timeline initially envisaged. On March 14, 2024, Ghana and some other West African countries experienced internet interruptions caused by cuts to undersea fiber optic cables, which severely impacted vital internet services and adversely affected some businesses. While speaking to City Business News, CEO of the Telcos Chamber, Engineer Dr. Kenneth Ashibe, said the NCA is on course to resolve the matter.
It's important to also note that there's quite some improvements that the repair works in terms of the undersea cables have gone from. So SAT-3, for example, has been restored. ACE has been restored. There's just a few things that they have to finish, and then they would move on to main one as well.
Meanwhile, touching on the NCA's approval for Starlink broadband to operate in Ghana, Engineer Dr. Kenneth Ashibe said that this will complement efforts to improve quality internet connectivity.
What is going to happen is that this is going to be complementary to the services that happen. You might have, you know, some of the network providers, you know, add that to their mix, and then people might also want to be able to take that as their primary connection, because maybe they might be in a difficult to reach area and all of that. But the only new thing is that Starlink is going to be regulated. And
Chief Executive Officer of the Chamber of Telecommunications, Engineer Dr. Kenneth Ashibe. Now, the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers, COPEC, is warning of potential fuel shortages in Ghana if the government proceeds with plans to designate the Bulk Energy Storage and Transportation Company Limited, BEST, as the exclusive aggregator of Central Oil Refinery products within the Gold for Oil program. All this comes amidst concerns raised by the Chamber of Bulk Oil Distributors, which argues that such a move would unfairly target bulk oil import, distribution and export companies. Now, Executive Secretary of COPEC, Duncan Amwa, tells City Business News government must desist from intervening in the deregulated downstream petroleum sector.
Without a single aggregator policy, what we are simply saying is that government is going to put in the forex to help Central procure crude. Whatever Central produces will be controlled or product managed by BOS, which means that government indirectly has taken over the running of the private refinery simply to control forex and prices on the market. Like I've always said, you cannot deregulate a market and on another hand seek to regulate it, whereas you have given licenses to these independent players to also contribute their quota towards fuel security.
Duncan Amwa is Executive Secretary of the Chamber of Petroleum Consumers, COPEC. Finally, a recent study conducted by Deloitte reveals that nearly half of corporate women are concerned about their personal safety at work or while traveling for business. Interestingly, 92% of these women are hesitant to pursue senior leadership roles. Here's a news desk report.
The survey spanning 10 countries and sampling over 5,000 working women has highlighted a concerning trend in the corporate world. Despite reporting loyalty towards the employers and maintaining high levels of productivity, many women are facing obstacles in their career progression and retention due to company culture. The survey found that half of these women are experiencing higher stress levels compared to the previous year, with a similar number expressing concerns about their mental health in the workplace.
That was a news desk report by Emmanuel Opong talking about the findings outlined in the Deloitte Women at Work 2024 Global Outlook Report. Well, that's it for City Business News and Eyewitness News. It was brought to you by GCB Bank PLC. GCB Personal Loan made that big move and dream a reality. My name is Akosia Ochidu. Stay with us. Up next is Point Blank.
Eyewitness News. Be there as it happens. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Point Blank on Eyewitness News. My name is Selom Adunu. Tonight on Point Blank, the LPG Marketing Companies Association of Ghana are unhappy with the National Petroleum Authority. In an earlier issued statement, they have voiced their strong opposition to the newly introduced $80 per metric ton tax on the pump price of LPG. And they say that if this is allowed to continue, LPG will become too expensive for households to afford. And they say the consequences of that could be dire. Gabi Kume is a vice chairman of the LPG Marketing Companies Association of Ghana and is my guest tonight on Point Blank. Hello, Gabi. Welcome to Point Blank.
Thank you, my brother, and thank you for the invitation.
Yes,
I'm happy to be here.
It's a pleasure. I mean, we've been speaking about cylinder recirculation, LPG matters, and all of that. Here we are again with another one. The MPA. It has introduced some $80 per metric ton. I don't know if it's on LPG products, and $80 per metric ton doesn't look very huge given the volume of business you do. And why are you strongly opposed to this particular do I call it levy on the job you do?
Thank you very much, my brother. I think $80 is very, very huge to the ordinary consumer. Mm. I want to give a little background to this. I mean, somewhere in 2020, Cabinet instructed MPA to take measures to ensure that consumption of LPG is doubled in Ghana. Mm-hmm. We were then at 25% penetration level, and the instruction from Cabinet was that by 2030, His Excellency and his cabinet wants us to increase consumption of LPG from 25% penetration level to 50% by the year 2030. Mm. We felt that was a very laudable objective to set. So consistently, we have been doing a lot to ensure that we help achieve that goal. Mm. But we realized that one of the main factors contributing against this noble objective, fighting strongly against this objective, is the fact that the pump price of the product is so high that the ordinary consumer is no longer able to afford. Mm. So consistently, our association have been calling on government to consider removing the existing taxes on LPG, taxes which were introduced in 2015, 2016, 2017, thereabout. Prior to the introduction of taxes on LPG, LPG consumption in Ghana was growing at an average rate of about 16.5%. Mm. After the introduction of the taxes, the growth slowed down. We peaked in 2020, 2021, but since 2021, LPG consumption in Ghana has taken a nosedive. Mm. And it's mainly as a result of the fact that the pump price of the product is so high that the ordinary consumer is no longer able to afford. So, like I indicate, consistently we have called on government. We have written letters to the Ministry of Finance, to government, to MPA, to the Ministry of Energy, to consider removing the taxes on the product so we can buy LPG at cost. Mm. Because this is a product government wants to increase in its consumption. Of all the petroleum products, it's only LPG that cabinet singled out and say, guys, let's ensure that we double consumption of LPG in Ghana. That tells you the importance of that product. But we have been calling on government to remove the taxes, because this is a product which is being subsidized in our neighboring country like Cote d'Ivoire. Mm. Cote d'Ivoire is subsidizing LPG. Mm. But in Ghana, we've hit about, in fact, if you add this, the recent introduction, we are paying about 20, 22, 25% taxes and levies on LPG, and we feel that is a deterrent to consumption. So we have been at this course trying to see how government can reduce the cost of LPG so the ordinary consumer can afford. Then somewhere last month, I think early part of this month, we woke up one morning to see that a levy of about $80 per metric ton has been slapped on the product, which goes translate to about 1 cedi 20 pesos per every kilo of LPG that you buy. Prior to that, we were buying LPG at about 14 cedis per kilo, but after that introduction, LPG price shot up to about 16 cedis per kilo. So we have written a letter to MPA that, look, this is a product that government wants to improve its consumption. You can't eat your cake and have it. You can't set such a laudable objective to increase consumption. And at the same time, you keep piling taxes on the product to push away consumers. Like I did indicate earlier, consumption of LPG in Ghana has taken a nosedive since 2021. And this is a product we have set a target to increase its consumption. So there is no way you can continue piling taxes on the product and at the same time expect to achieve an increment in consumption. LPG is not a luxury product that you increase its price when you want rich people to patronize. It's a mass product. It's a product for the ordinary Ghanaian. It's a product that the only way you can engender consumption is to take measures to reduce the cost of the product so you can attract a lot more people into your consumption net so we can all together achieve government objective.
So you did make the point that you woke up one morning and $80 per metric ton was slapped on this. Are you by this saying that you were not consulted in the process? You did not know that any such levy was going to be imposed on the product?
No,
it just happened.
We just woke up one morning and saw a letter that is introducing this onto the product, and we feel industry was not consulted. It was just slapped, and an account was opened, and BDCs were asked to pay this money into that account. MPA later came out to explain that it's not a tax, but it's rather a margin which is going to be given to those who are building bottling plants to implement cylinder recirculation. But the question is, why should somebody's margin be collected by MPA? We are all in the industry. If I want to put up an LPG plant, I go to the bank, borrow money, invest in the plant, and I recoup my investment through the margin that I get by selling LPG on the market. So why should this special account be created and this money be contributed to that account? And the explanation is that is going to be given to these private people who are building bottling plants. We don't have any problem if you want to give the private investor his due. You want to give them margins, but give it to them. They have built the plants. So just give it to them so that they can sell, roll out the product onto the market and recoup their investment through that. So we don't see how.
Maybe that is to encourage more people to get into the sector. So for example, you sitting here, if you're interested in building a bottling plant, you will also become a beneficiary of this new levy that has been slapped on the product.
No, but that is not what is done.
It's to encourage people to get
that
into
is
the
not
sector.
What is done. Why must you encourage somebody by deliberately creating a fund to cushion private investors. I don't think that is the way to do. We have all invested in LPG. LPG industry has been built by ordinary Ghanaians. There's no direct support of government. All the over 800 LPG stations we see across the country were built by indigenous Ghanaians. LPG is the only industry that has 100% local content in terms of participation. In Ghana now, can you point any industry in Ghana that is not foreign dominated, that doesn't have foreign hands in it? Even Bairachi and Gobe are being sold by Chinese. Even there's a Chinese guy in Kumasi who is a trotro driver's mate. LPG, the LPG industry is the only industry. I challenge anybody to point any industry in Ghana that is local.
You're telling me that no foreigner has any investment
in the industry. There is no foreign. We have about 42 LPG marketing companies. All these companies are driven by indigenous Ghanaians.
Mm.
We have 800 LPG retail outlets across the country. All of them are built by indigenous Ghanaians.
Mm.
You can't tell me, you can't point one LPG station which is owned by a foreigner. So this is an industry we expect government to protect. This is an industry we expect that government should nurture and grow so that the Ghanaian can take over the commanding height of our economy.
Mm.
But we see government action.
Maybe government wants the sector to contribute so that more local people or indigenous people will be raised, so the sector grows better.
Yeah, I'm happy you said maybe, but that's not, that
didn't. But it does appear that government is not just doing this on its own. There's a law, the fees and charges, miscellaneous provisions, regulations 2023. Government or the MPA is basing this particular levy on. What do you say about that?
Yes, I mean there are hundreds of laws in Ghana that has been passed that is not implemented in this manner.
Mm.
Why are we so much in a hurry to implement laws that has to do with taxing the people?
Mm.
That one we implement them with the speed of a lightning.
Yeah, but the point is, before these things are passed, I mean, stakeholders often are spoken to, or stakeholders would have known about it, and if they have issues, they make those issues known. Are you saying that throughout the process, Parliament was considering this and all of that, the LPG marketing companies association did not know about it?
There's no record of this. We didn't know anything about this.
Your inputs were not solicited.
No input was solicited. All of a sudden, we wake up one day and we saw this.
Mm.
And this has contributed the price of LPG going up by about 7.5%.
Mm.
And this is already a product which is
so,
in
so
decline.
So is this increment, as this new levy, I mean, is it in effect? It's in full force. It's in full
force. Yes, it came into effect on the 1st of April.
Mm.
And the figures we picked from the first half of the month, the consumption figures we pick indicate that this month we are going to record the lowest LPG consumption figures over the past 5 years.
Mm.
So it's real. Consumption of LPG, just last week or 2 weeks ago, IES released a report. We support our stand that consumption of LPG is in the decline.
Mm.
Now, the whole of last week, I was in the north. LPG consumption in the north is the north consumes just about 3% of our national consumption. LPG stations in the north are closing down because they are not able to get sales. If you go to, we used to have about 7 stations in Wa.
Mm.
2 of them are down. It's only 5 which is not operating. We have about 5 in Boga. One is down.
Because the people are not patronizing.
People are not patronizing. And for us, this also goes to this call for a rethink of government policy of cylinder recirculation.
Mm.
Because even with the current system that the consumer can buy in bits, at this current system, even if you want 5 CDs of LPG, you can just lift your cylinder, go to the nearest LPG point and buy it. The cylinder recirculation is going to come with a fuel cylinder with a predetermined price. You either have the full amount, or you go and buy charcoal or cut firewood and cook your meal.
Mm.
So it's a genuine concern that.
But cylinder recirculation will have various sizes of
the smallest. The smallest cylinder we have now is costing about 100 cedis now.
Mm.
And when send your reporters to any LPG station, 60% of the people in Accra, consumers in Accra, are not able to fill their cylinders.
Mm.
When you go to the district,
it's even lower.
It goes as high as 90%.
Mm.
See, so it's a genuine concern that we are raising, that there is no way government can achieve an increment in consumption. Cylinder recirculation, yes, it has the advantage of making the product available.
Mm-hmm. So the cylinder recirculation really will deepen the penetration we spoke about earlier.
Yes.
Because it will now be available to a lot of people. But that, of course, availability must come with affordability.
Availability does not guarantee consumption. Mm. We all pass by shops that has
very
product,
nice things.
Very nice things that we just go turn it around and walk away.
Mm.
If we don't work on the price, what we are going to do is we are going to end up incurring distribution costs unnecessarily.
Mm.
There is no way cylinder recirculation is going to work in Ghana if we don't take concrete measures to reduce the price of LPG. Mm.
But so you wrote to the MPA a couple of days ago. Have you heard from them? What are they saying?
Well, we are yet to hear from them. We sent this letter to them about 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
We are not getting any responses yet. But
have you made follow-ups?
We write letters to them. Those they want to respond, they respond to us.
Mm.
They haven't responded. They are regulators. We respect them. We give them some time, some reasonable time to see if we are going to get any response.
Mm.
In no response is also a response anyway. So we are waiting.
So I see that you copied a number of people, about 26 persons or institutions.
It tells you how serious the problem is.
So what do you expect? I mean, have you sought audience with any of these persons or institutions you have copied on this?
Yes, indeed. Some of these individuals and institutions have called us for further explanation, for us to explain things to them better, and we have done that. So we are still, the letter was directed straight to MPA. So MPA is the one who is supposed to respond. But we will continue to give them some time and have some patience and see what happens.
So if you wait for a while and no response is coming, what will the marketing companies do?
The association will decide. Yeah.
But what options are available to you?
I can't speak of any option now. We have a steering committee, and then we have the association membership. They are all in support of what we've done. So whatever the outcome is, if we get a response, we go back to the association. If we don't get a response, we go back to the association to take a decision on the way forward.
I see. Thanks so much, Gabby Kumi, who is the vice chair of the LPG Marketing Companies Association of Ghana. If you have some final words, you may want to share those final words with the people.
Just to thank you for having me, but just to reemphasize the point that there is no way we can achieve consumption growth if we don't take measures to take off the taxes on the LPG. If government is really serious as increasing consumption of LPG in Ghana, the only way to do that is to bring the price of LPG down. Because currently the product has been priced out of the reach of the ordinary Ghanaian.
So that was the voice of Gabby Kumi. He's the vice chair of the LPG Marketing Companies Association of Ghana. They are unhappy with the NPA for the new $80 per metric ton levy slapped on LPG products. They want the NPA to withdraw this new levy, which NPA describes as a reduction in margins. So that's how we conclude today's edition of Point Blank and Eyewitness News for that matter. Show produced by Nana Kobna Welsing, Bevelyn London, Zoe Abubedu Ado. Technical assistance with Daniel Squashy. Earlier you heard Akosia Archery. Social media support by Edwin Kwa Kofi. My name is Selom Adonu. Have a good evening.
City News. We speak first. Reach our hotline on 0302-224959 and get interactive on Facebook, City 97.3 FM, and on Twitter at City 973.